Copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
So the university that I work for has about 12,000 ground students. 6 years ago when I started, we had about 1,200 students. And so in the last 6 years, we have gone from about 1,500 students to 12,000 ground students. We have in our online modality 60,000 students who learn in an online format. So the university has gone through an enormous growth cycle. And I don't know how much longer that will last, but it has at least created the need for systems that would scale. So when I first started in my ministry to college students and working with young leaders, I went to a sister school who was a little bit larger than the school that I'm at now. And at the time, I was trying to figure out how they developed young leaders and to maybe find a model that would work for me and how I would develop a staff that would help develop young student leaders. And so I asked this campus pastor from another university, I said, how many staff members do you have, professional staff? And he said, I have 32 professional staff members. I had three. That was me and two others. And I thought, their campus was just a little bit larger than ours, but it didn't warrant 32 in my mind. I thought, I had three, he has 32. How am I going to do this? This is impossible. If it takes that many for him to develop his student ministry programs, I have no chance. So we talked and talked, and I was discouraged. And he said, or I asked him, I said, how many student leaders do you have? 32 professional staff, but how many students who lead? And he said, well, I've got, you know, a couple of volunteers, maybe a half dozen. I said, so your programs are staff driven? He said, yes. I said, your students don't lead the programs. He goes, no, staff does. And I thought, if a student comes to my university to learn how to lead, then we as a university are obligated to create systems where students lead, not staff. So we decided, and it was a mental shift, where we decided that our systems would be developed to encourage and empower students to carry the responsibilities of leadership on our campus, not staff. So I've discovered, at least in the American context, that many Christian universities look at staff to drive the programs, to drive the experiences. And we decided 6 years ago that we were going to lean into students to do that. So if there's any ministry that's going to take place, it will be because students are leading students. So now that's a risk for some of us to think students can't carry the responsibility. They don't know what they're doing. They're going to make mistakes. They're not going to have maturity. They're not going to have skills to lead. You're absolutely right. Some will, but most won't. So it is dangerous to do that. It is risky to do that. So we had no choice. I had no budget. I had no money to pay more staff. So we had to figure out how to build systems that students would find a responsibility and be responsible with that responsibility and be effective in it. And so me and my two staff, our responsibility was to become coaches. And that's really important in my mind for you to hear me say that the professional staff became a coach. Now, I was an athlete when I was a college student. And when I was a high school and grade schools, I was a student. So I knew a bad coach, and I knew what a good coach was. And so I wanted to develop in my staff the skills and abilities to become good coaches. Not good athletes or performers on the field, but great coaches on the sideline of leadership, so that the players or those young student leaders would be the ones that would lead. And so we created a model, and that's where I want to end up today. I want to end up with a model about millennial leaders, about creating student leaders, a framework that I hope will maybe give you some underpinnings to what you're doing with young student leaders. So I feel like I have a second life. I was, like I mentioned, 12 years as a senior pastor, and in the American context, you're always running to get to the front of the line. You know, the pressure to be successful and to write books and to be famous is, you know, the big pressure that you live in the American context. And I didn't enjoy it. I didn't enjoy ministry as a result. And I moved into motorsports around non-believers, and I loved it. I loved the outreach. I loved dealing with non-church people. And I feel the same way now that I did when I got into motorsports that I do working with young leaders. It's messy, it's hard, it's frustrating, but it is life-giving. And so I am thrilled to have this opportunity and for you to have your opportunities to develop young leaders. And I hope that you don't see it as a burden, but you see it as a great opportunity to have kingdom influence, not only from what you do, but for what you do through young leaders that need you to develop them and encourage them. And I want to get to a model that has framed the way my staff thinks about our leaders. So currently, we have 100 staff that work with 700 plus student leaders. So we are committed to student development and student leadership development. It is who we are, it is what we are about, and we are learning every day about how to do it better. Now, what I mean by that, when I was a young student leader, when I first became a Christian when I was 18 years old, I didn't know anything about the faith, I didn't know anything about serving, I didn't know anything about Jesus. I was brand new. And I was kind of thrust into a position of responsibility, and I had to learn how to swim on my own. And it was not a good model. You know, just basically threw me right out into the water, and I had to figure out how to swim. That was my leadership experience. That was my mentoring experience. It was just somebody, my mentor, whoever that was, threw me into the deep end of the swimming pool and said, learn how to swim. That's how I learned how to lead. Learn how to lead. And some of us know that same feeling. You are leading now because somebody grabbed you by the belt and by the collar and just threw you into leadership, and you've been figuring out how to swim and get your stroke going, and now here you are. And you're thinking, how do I pass on to this new, this millennial generation that is very different than maybe the generation of your youth and how they think and how they expect to be trained and how they expect to be empowered? And so some of you are like, I'm scared to death how to do this because the way I learned is not the way they learn. So let me start here first. Before we get to that model, for you to consider a few of the leadership ideas or approaches to leadership that there are within Christendom today. And some of you have a certain leadership style. And so as I read through a few of these, you're going to go, ah, that's me. And others of you that know each other are going to go, ah, that's him, that's her. Or you're going to think, that's my senior leader. The person that I look to is like that. Oh, yeah, yeah, right? And so they have their strengths in those styles and they have their weaknesses. And so what's important for us to recognize is who we are. If we have not figured out the way we lead, it's going to be very difficult for us to know how to teach young leaders. So you need to figure out who you are and your style of leadership. Number one would be a visionary leader. Are you a visionary leader? where you see the future and you can create the image for your people and you know what you want, and that's where you're driving towards. A visionary leader or a directional leader, where you see what's going on and you say, this is the direction we're going. Different than a visionary who sees it, may not know how to get there, but a directional leader is the one that knows the path to take. You know the next steps. Or a strategic leader, where you can put those systems together in the right place and all those right paths so that they coordinate together. Maybe that's your strength. A managing leader, the ability to organize. You know, when there's chaos, you are brought in and you know how to put those things in the right place and organize those systems. Maybe a motivational leader. That person, when everybody is down, they seek you out and they look in your eyes and they feel encouraged. A word comes from your lips and they go, yes, I can go, I can do it. Maybe that's the kind of leader you are. Maybe a shepherding leader. When they're crying, you're crying. When they need to have a hug around the shoulders, you're the one that hugs them around the shoulders. You're a shoulder to cry on. You know how to nurture them and love them deeply. Team builder. You can get everybody on the same page. You can bring them together, and you're like the quarterback. This is a football, American football term. Quarterback. What is it in soccer? Is there a term for who's in charge? A team captain? Team captain. You get them in a huddle, and they look in your eyes, and they go, they gain strength from that, right? An entrepreneurial leader. Not only do you have vision, but energy. I work, my president of my university is an entrepreneurial leader. He never sleeps. I get text messages from him, 2 a.m, 4 a.m, emails. I never see him eat. He eats one meal a day. I don't know when. He never sleeps. He never eats. He's never tired. And he knows everything. It's ridiculous. He's got eyes, you know. And he's great passion. That's how my university has gone from 1,500 to 12,000 in 6 years. I mean, he's that kind of a leader. Re-engineering leader. Somebody who backs up and sees this chaos and knows how to re-engineer what happens. That tends to be a little bit of me. When I went into the churches that I pastored, they were broken and failing, and I went in to re-engineer them, put them back together in a different way. We called them renewal pastors back in the day. Re-engineering leaders. Bridge builders. Some of you are bridge builders. You know how to create partnerships that will help your organization to become effective. So hopefully, in those brief descriptions, you said to yourself, that's me. That's who I am. Now, that's going to be really important as it comes to the moments when your young leaders or your young prospective leaders begin to lean into you for influence and for mentoring and for coaching. What they're going to draw from you in many ways is going to be guided by how you see yourself and maybe how you have experienced leadership development in your own life. In today's world of broken families, many young men and young women grow up without a mom or without a dad. And they look for those that are older than them to take that role of older brother or father or auntie or uncle or grandma or grandpa to draw from. Many of you have those relationships with those senior members of your family who are a blessing to you, blessing to the church, to have those mature saints who love Jesus, who pass on the abilities and the skills to survive the difficulties of life. There are many millennials today that don't have that. So your age is a gift to young people. In order for us to really find joy in developing young people, we need to embrace the gray hairs that we're beginning to see and see that as a gift from God. In America, every old pastor wants to be 30 all over again. the haircuts, the pants, the shirts, the, you know, it's like, you're old. It's okay. Be old. Be mature. Embrace it. Let God use that in your life. One of the key ingredients, my two boys were going through college while I was the campus pastor. They were the first ones to call me out saying, Dad, you're old. Don't do that. Don't say that. So they taught me how to be comfortable in my skin, to be okay with that. And what I found was a great gift of instruction from my boys about how to be a pastor to young people, to how to be a senior leader to young leaders. And part of that started with being okay with who I am. Now, doing that sometimes means when you're spending time sharpening iron with iron, sometimes it's an old file stone with a brand new knife. And so I think we need to be okay with being who we are and when we're mentoring one another and sharpening one another. So one of the things that one of the first leadership principles that I have taught my staff is that it is your responsibility of what God has given you. You are to be a steward over that responsibility. Too many leaders want to speak into everybody else's business versus being responsible for what God has given them to be stewards over. In my mind, it's a reflection of this passage in that if we are faithful in what God has given us, He will expand our opportunities and responsibilities. God will not give us more than we can handle in terms of those challenges and difficulties in life. I think there's something about the way God interacts and blesses those of us who lead is that He expands our responsibilities as we are faithful in a little. And so I think that's true with young leaders. Sometimes we can pile on them too much, and I'll get to that in a moment with the model. There is a real art in being a pastor and a shepherd. And part of that with younger people is teaching them how to respect those that are older. Too many that I have seen from an older generation of leader has tried to be younger versus being okay with being older and learning how to teach younger to respect the older leaders within their midst. That art form of encouraging young leaders to learn and to respect those that are older than them is part of the art of being a shepherd. Sometimes we abandon that. And part of the reason for that, I think, is that most of us, or many of us, are tempted as we get older to not embrace being an older leader. And what ends up happening with younger leaders is that they don't respect being mature because those who have become mature leaders don't embrace being a mature leader. So in order for that to create the right kind of foundation, I think that it would be helpful to us if we made that a part of what we teach younger people, is the value from one shepherd to a sheep is to understand the value of respecting those who are older. Now, in some cultures, some of you come from parts of Europe where that is deeply ingrained in the culture, in your experience in church, your experience in your city, and your social dynamics are very geared around respect for your elders. Some of us have found it different with the younger generation. There is no respect. There is no appreciation. There is no value for those that are older. And some of that is the responsibility of the younger, and some of that is because the way those of us that are older have treated younger leaders. And we need to own that. I think that's our responsibility to be sensitive to how we have contributed to either the value of the elders in the midst or how we have worked against it by the way that we have led as an older leader. So as I get older, I feel the charge and the responsibility to do that, to pass on to young leaders, to know how to let go. So I want to talk a little bit about millennials. And this may be true of the younger leaders that you're dealing with. And what has been discovered in research, what I've discovered in my own research and my personal experiences with young leaders, these tend to be true about this generation. And this is going to frame our thinking about our model. So number one, they are special. Millennials see themselves as special, unique, and different from any other young generation that has ever lived, which we probably thought the same thing when we were young. We were very special. Well, millennials today have that frame of mind, and maybe at a different degree, maybe a little higher degree, they feel more celebrated and praised. You know, parents today have a way of flooding their children with all kinds of affirmation that almost borders on being unhealthy and unrealistic. May not be true for you and your church and your culture, young leaders, but for many of us, they think they are special. Secondly, they've been sheltered. When I was a boy, back in the 70s, late 60s and 70s, I would get on my little Schwinn bicycle and I would ride all over the city. Now, I grew up in L.A., Los Angeles, millions and millions of people. I rode my bicycle everywhere, from the mountains to the ocean. And you can get to both in L.A. There, we had everything. And everything in between. And on my bicycle, I would go all over the place. And when my children were born in Southern California before we moved to Arizona, I wouldn't let them go to the end of the street. I was as panicked and paranoid as any other parent that I was watching and observing. And so my children, to a large degree, I had two strapping boys, but I still hovered over them for fear that something would happen to them. And some of you know that feeling, that compulsion, that helicopter manner in which you've hovered around your kids to make sure they're going to be okay. Millennials today have grown up in a very protected environment. Safety measures, parents solving all their problems. If they have a conflict at school, mom and dad will go down to the school and they'll solve the problem versus letting the kids figure out how to resolve a conflict. The millennials today have not engaged in things that maybe many of us did. Thirdly, they're confident. They see the world as they can achieve. They can do anything. As their parents have told them, their coaches have told them, you can do anything. You can be anything you want. And for those of you who have auditioned some singers before, you go, they can't sing. If you audition me for a worship band, it would be clear I can't do anything I want to. I cannot sing. I am not musical in any way. And so for some of us that have heard this as children, that you can do anything, there's a level of confidence that is not realistic. Team-oriented. Millennials today want to do things in groups. Most of us, or at least by your visual expressions a few minutes ago when we were talking about how you learned how to be leaders and how you were thrown into the deep end and you were kind of given this level of independence where you were going to be this great leader, and that's you learned to swim on your own. But many of our millennials today have done things in packs, in groups, in cliques, and they feel most comfortable in those teams. That will help shape our model. They're team-oriented. Fifthly, they are achieving. They're college-bound. They're knowledgeable. They know how to go around the world on their phone or on their laptop and gain information and knowledge and understanding about things that you and I had to spend decades coming to terms with or learning, especially those of us that remember days before cell phones, before the internet, when information was gathered at the library or sitting with somebody in long conversations over a cup of coffee or a cup of tea or a meal. And today, seconds later, you have the information like that. So this generation, they're achievement-oriented. They can gain information quickly. And they have been focused on their career for many, many years. I remember when I was a young athlete, I played many sports until I got to high school. Then I narrowed down on one. But today, at least in my context, kids from this age have club coaches and personal coaches that walk with them from the very beginning, and they're going to make them a famous athlete or famous musician or what from this moment. And so as a result, you have these millennials who are very compelled about their future, and they think they know exactly what they're going to achieve in life. As a result of that, they are pressured, number six. They feel the pressure of the achievement that their mom and dad are setting them up for, or the leaders and mentors in their life that they expect them to achieve. And so the pressure that they feel and they grow up with from a very young age weighs on them as a millennial. So you may not see it, but my encouragement to you is they feel it. And lastly, is they're somewhat conventional. Now again, this is a little bit American. Maybe a lot of what I've said today is American, and so you can sort through that. But one of the things that I've learned about this millennial generation, because in America it was very much a capitalist country, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, independent thinking, and today it's becoming more government or state-centered. And more support is coming from the state and from the government than ever before. And so the millennial generation that now I have a responsibility to invest in and develop is growing up very differently than I did in the 60s and 70s. So for some of you, I think the conventional thought that some of these millennials have that may strike you as being very old-fashioned or very different than what it used to be is a little bit of a wrinkle on how this new millennial generation, at least that we're facing, is beginning to manifest itself. So what do you do before you come to a place of developing a model? I think there are a few things that we need to consider in terms of how and what we focus on in the spiritual formation of young millennials. And then I'm going to have a model for leadership development. So some of this is building the backdrop for the model. So Richard Foster's famous book on the celebration of disciplines. And most of us know those classic lists, you know, of meditation and prayer and et cetera. I want to create a little bit of a wrinkle on areas of focus for spiritual development amongst millennials. Not that Foster's is irrelevant, but I think there are certain points of emphasis that we need to drill down on when we're talking to millennial young people and just forming them spiritually in order to get to the place of developing leaders. So I would assume that if we're talking about biblical leaders, young biblical leaders, that we're going to have a biblical construct of responsibility and levels of maturity. And if we're taking Paul's framework for selecting leaders for the church and some of the things that Paul instructed Timothy and Titus to discover in those who would be leaders in the church, that we would superimpose some of that upon those young leaders that we're going to surface out of the general population of young people or the millennial generation to say, you're going to be a future leader that I'm going to invest in. So as you're investing in the general spiritual formation of young people, out of that group will surface those that you say they have an inclination towards leadership. They may even begin to manifest that they have a gift for leadership. But before you get to that place, what is it that you are focused on in your conversations, on your interactions with millennials? What are you talking about with them? So let me give you a few things that would really be a blessing to them if they found you in conversation with them about. Number one would be their faith. You say, well, that's kind of obvious. But what I mean by that is that there is such illiteracy about the Christian faith today amongst millennials that we need to not assume they understand what we understand. What we know about Jesus and all the theological components of being a Christian that the millennials don't know today. Maybe that you learned in a Christian home or in Sunday school or whatever programs of developing young people were. But today, these millennials have not grown up with that kind of exposure. So faith issues and faith components, I think, are really important, which leads to how they're formed. Now, part of this is related to how young people have experienced life and intimacy today. They've gotten the proverbial cart before the horse. They've gotten some things backwards. And so the way they understand formation, emotional formation, and how they've experienced it has been a little bit backwards and unconventional and probably ineffective in many ways. And so we have people that look older or may be appear to be mature enough, and yet they have not developed well. They have not been formed internally well. And so subjects and issues about their own emotional formation and what they experienced in their home and what they thought about those experiences and how they matured beyond those things and what formed them internally. Thirdly, is their identity. Talking about who they think they are. How do they see themselves? How you see them and how we project on them what we understand about young people and millennials, and some of us have a very clear view of how they are and what they're like and what they should be like. And for many millennials, I think they feel like, you really don't understand me, or I don't understand myself because of the way you look at me and understand and interact with me. And so their identity is not clear. So talking to them about these issues of their own personal identities, very important. And church life. Many of the millennials that I have had the opportunity to interact with have abandoned the church. And quite often, for good reason. Not biblical or theological reasons. There's always good reasons to be involved in the church. But from an experiential reasons, they've checked out. And some of you are frustrated. Why can't I find any young leaders? How do I even recruit young people to be in the game, let alone find a leader? And some of that is because of what they've experienced in church life, what they've observed about their mom and their dad and what it looked like for them in church. And they said, psh. They've been to business meetings. They've heard from their mom and dad about church leadership and the underbelly of it and how ugly it can be. And the kids hear that at the dinner table and in the living rooms, and they said, no, thank you. And they've walked away. And so one of the things that we've discovered, and maybe you've overused this term as much as we have, but is to talk about community and how important the idea and the concept of community is. Because remember, the research bears out that millennial generation has a deep value for doing things in teams. And so if you can build the idea around young people, the importance of learning about their identity because they're in community with others, they learn about themselves in those relationships. You do that in church. I think that's how our gifts are affirmed, right? You learned how to be a teacher or to be a leader or to be a giver by the affirmation of God's people who looked at you and said, you can lead. You give. You're encouraging. You can teach. It came from those others that affirmed your gifts as you were exercising them in community. And I think the millennial generation has community. They want to be in community, but the community of faith has been something that has not been appealing to them, the way that we've done it. And so they form these communities outside of the organized church and the institutional church. And they're finding community there, and they're finding affirmation, and they're finding their identity and some definition of who they are in moving forward. We need to help them experience that in a Christian fellowship community context. And we found that talking about community instead of church, and meaning some, in our own minds the same thing, but talking about community, that millennials will relate to that. They relate to the idea of community. Vocation. Students are, they want to achieve, but they don't know if they can achieve like their moms and their dads did. Their pastor, they don't know if they can become as successful as their parents. Those of us that are baby boomers, you know, I'm from the baby boomer generation, and it was all about us. It was all about our accumulation and our status. And so our kids watched us accumulate, gain fame and status and stature within our communities of influence. And they didn't see anything being passed on to us other than you just observe me and watch me and come with me as I go. And so I think some of our young leaders in the making have observed and been in these kind of laboratory experiences with those of us who are from a different generation of leadership. So vocation and how to find those paths to a professional career, these millennials are looking for that. We're finding huge interest in internships and mentoring. Those ideas, not so much discipleship when it's all one and the same, but using the term intern, using the term mentor, means something to this generation, to the millennial generation. Discipleship is kind of a church word. Theologically, we understand it. But for millennials, it's kind of like, it's churchy. But they understand mentoring. They understand a coach. They understand those kinds of terms. So vocation. The sixth area would be morality. Speaking into moral ideas. Ideas that shape their moral decisions, their moral compass. Students today have lost their bearings in so many ways. Those of us that have been exposed to a Judeo-Christian way of thinking, is the general millennial today has not been exposed quite like we've been exposed, possibly. Here's another one that the church has been very uncomfortable talking about is sexuality. We have to speak to sexuality, sexual issues, sexual experimentation all across the map. This millennial generation have been exposed from a very young age to things that have been so counter to biblical thought or a Christian worldview that the confusion related to that, and this is going to build in, this is a piece of the model that I'm going to share with you in just a moment. This idea of sexuality has so warped the idea of how to have meaningful, intimate, real relationships. So in our spiritual formation conversations, we have to speak about sexuality and how it fits into conversations about your spiritual makeup. Now, that's a whole nother lecture, but there is something there I would encourage you to explore, because for those of us that have a wonderful married life, you know that point of intimacy that is so meaningful to a husband and a wife that experiences that. That idea, that reflection of intimacy, where intimacy can also be used in conversations of friendships and meaningful relationships where you have an intimate friend. They will often go straight to sexual relationships and say that was empty and vague and void because it was a hookup culture. And so it's all twisted up in their minds. So to spiritually form a millennial, you need to talk about sex. The whole gamut of it needs to be explored, and we need to become very comfortable in talking about related issues. I've seen a couple workshops this week about transgendered conversations and the LGBT issues. For some of you, you are exposed to it. Often, others of you are very uncomfortable with the subject. You need to learn how to talk about it. Millennials are living it out. And what you'll talk to them about when they get to the age where they're getting ready to get married or they're in their early 30s, and what they will reveal to you about what they've experienced may shock you. But it's real. So learn how to talk about it. Relationships, that's a given. That's an obvious one. But I want to kind of tweak it a little bit, because most of their relationships are spent on their phone or their laptop, texting, sexting, Snapchat. Do you have Snapchat in Europe? You know what Snapchat is? All these different apps that just create these synthetic, unreal relationships, these access points, and they define relationships in this technological way that is not real. We know that they're not real. There's a level of engagement, but not real human relationships. Then lastly, mentoring. To talk about mentoring, and that's kind of a revisit to an earlier comment. the idea of mentoring, what that means to a student, or yeah, I'd say a student, to a young millennial. All right, here's perfect, 10 minutes. So I'm going to give you the model that we use, and this is what frames our millennial development, how we structure our programming to make young leaders. Number one, build a collaborative and social culture. Giving young leaders a chance to be a part of a team and to speak into it. Build a collaborative and social culture, or build a team. If you're going to build young leaders, you need to invite them into a team experience. I grew up one-on-one discipleship. That's the only way to go. One brother with another brother teaching me how to pray. I didn't have this, but that was the big thing. I had to learn it on my own, but that was the thing that I learned we needed to do. So in my early church pastoring days, it was one-on-one discipleship. And that's great. It works. But the millennials today, they feel more safe in a group, three or four other millennials with them that they can look at and take cues from and learn together in a team, where they can speak together in a collaborative way about what they're experiencing, what they're thinking. Number two, this may be hard for some of us, but to delegate responsibility. Give it to them. Let them have it. Let it be theirs. Let go. And for those of us that have done it and maybe done it well, it's like, hey, I don't know. They're going to mess it up. They're going to break it. They might. And you may have to go back and pick up the pieces. But if you want to develop a millennial, you have to let go and let them have it. You can't go on the field and kick the ball into the net if you're a coach. You've got to stand on the sideline and watch them make a bad pass, make a bad judgment, and maybe lose the game. But that's part of being a coach. They are the players. To think like that is very challenging for those that I found who are in leadership, is to let go, to hold things loosely when an opportunity comes along to give to a young millennial. So on our campus, we don't host other Christian organizations on our campus, because many of those great Christian organizations, and they're wonderful ones, we don't speak against, but in order for our model of student leadership development to work, student leaders have to have the opportunity to lead. So if I have crew or navigators or whatever organization that works well on a college campus come onto our campus and lead Bible studies, my student leaders won't be able to lead Bible studies. It's a risk, because some of our student leaders are crazy. And they say some things that you go, we need to talk. Let's go have coffee. I understand that you taught this. Let's talk about that. Have you thought through this idea? And they go, oh, wow. Right? That is the risk with letting go of responsibilities. But to protect that responsibility for a young leader is critical. Part of what that means is to let go, release that responsibility. Number three, provide them with internal and external training. To provide that young millennial with the training that you can give and maybe training that somebody else can give. So as a senior leader, you have to be good at partnerships so that they know it's not about you, it's about them, and you will work with others to help them. I think that a millennial will read that in us. If they think, we think, that we are the end-all to knowledge and information and how to become a leader, and we are not willing to bring others to speak into their development, then they will think it's more about us. And we need them to think it's about you, and it's about your development and your responsibility to be a leader in the future. And so I think that's a critical piece of the model. Fourthly, engage them on social media. Engage engage them on social media. So whatever platform that you use, whatever social media outlets that you have learned or need to learn. So my staff, they are 20-somethings. We try to hire college graduates to work with college kids. And so most of my staff are between 25 and 30 years old. They know every angle on social media. They get it. I trust them immensely. And we use it extensively to communicate and relate to our 700 student leaders. So my encouragement to you is to find ways to utilize social media and use it well, because young millennials are using it moment by moment. So the other thing I would say in relationship to that, and this is not true with church life today, is that church life is long and boring for most millennials. And we need to make it short. I do not speak, when I speak in chapel, we have chapels on Monday mornings at the lunch hour. They're voluntary. We have 5,000 college kids come together voluntarily every Monday morning. So in our Christian university, it is not mandated that you attend chapel. You can choose to go. 5,000 choose to go during the lunch hour on Monday. It's amazing to me. Part of that is because we have engaged the student leaders that relate to them in such a way that they lean on each other and create the pressure to be involved, and it doesn't come from us, the senior leaders, the faculty, the staff. We follow the student leaders. The student leaders carry the cultural bucket to make the difference on the campus. Fifthly, offer tours of duty. A little bit of a military term there. What I mean by that is little test opportunities. You know, the last thing a millennial wants to feel like is that you give them a responsibility that has no end. That they're going to die doing that. They don't want to feel that way. They want to feel like, give me something that lasts 2 weeks, 2 months, 6 weeks, you know, whatever it is. But it has a beginning, a middle, and an end. So that they know, they can see the end of the road. They can see the end of the responsibility. Millennials will thrive on that. And then as they grow, you stretch out those tours of duty. 6 months, a year. So part of the reason I'm here at the Forum, I'm going home. We have about 500 students that go around the world every summer. But we don't have any that come to Europe. So I'm here with one of my staff members, and I want to bring back about 25 students next year to serve, to do this, to work on the cameras and do whatever, and to be involved and to meet you. And I want those 25 students to maybe go to your place of ministry, where you live, and partner and be a part of what you're doing and learn from you and invest and commit and be involved in your life. I want to have 500 of our students in about 5 years be planted all over Europe to serve you, to be a blessing to you, to learn from you, to grow with you. That's my vision. That's why I'm here. I mean, what I'm sharing with you now, you know, if this is why I'm here, I should go home. That's probably what you're thinking, and that's okay. I know why I'm here. I have hundreds of student leaders back at home that I want to expose to you. So I will bring them next year, a handful of them, to be here for a short tour of duty. And then we'll go home, and then I'll talk to them. How'd it go? Who did you meet? What is God doing in your heart? It will have a beginning, middle, and an end. Lastly, coach them and praise them. For those of us that have been coached well, I was a baseball player, a little bit like cricket. But when I played well, my coach would put his arm around me and say, good job. He would also say, sit here. And then he'd instruct me on what I didn't do well. That was the coaching part. Millennials need both coaching and praise, affirmation. Now, this may seem obvious, but it's amazing how many of us in leadership, we long for affirmation. We need it. Does anybody appreciate us? I've been at this for decades, and I need somebody just to say, well done. I will wait for Jesus to say, well done, and good, faithful servant, hopefully. But I want it now too, right? And here are these poor young leaders as we are at the front of the leadership line looking for it from one another. And this poor young leader's like, what about me? And so we have to get over ourselves and say, you know what? Our day came when the crowds cheered for us, when they applauded what we did. And we now decide, you know what? My day of glory is over. It's time for them to be encouraged and coached and affirmed.